everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of the ARIA podcast. If you are new here, my name is Julianne Colwell, and I am the host and creator of the ARIA podcast, which is usually a podcast designed to give artists a voice and a platform. And I talk about music and art, and I usually interview people, and we just discuss a lot of issues within these spaces. But today, I'm going to be doing something completely different. So, without further ado, here is the episode. Hi, everyone. So today I'm doing an episode all by myself, and I'm really excited to try this out. This is the first time I'm doing this, and I just had this burst of inspiration recently out of my obsession for the new movie that just came out earlier this month, The Batman. And I want to talk about the musical score in The Batman and how the music kind of influences the plot of the film. And what's really cool about it is the musical score actually quotes other music from other artists and classical music, as well as Nirvana, which is one of my favorite bands of all time. So I wanted to talk about all of that today, and just forgive me if this episode is really scatterbrained and strange to you. I will try my best to edit it to where it makes sense and is very cohesive, but I'm really excited to dive into this episode. Before we get started, I want to recommend another podcast for you to check out. And no, this is not an ad. I'm just doing this out of the goodness of my heart, and that is to recommend the podcast, which is Movie Reviews No One Asked For, and it is starring my very good friends Richie Brennan and Alex Price, and they do really awesome movie reviews, and they talk about all sorts of stuff. But they actually did an episode very recently on the Batman movie, and that is part of the reason why I decided to make my own episode today. So thank you for the inspiration, fellas. They actually talk a lot about some of the things that I'm going to be addressing in my episode, but I'm going to be diving in a little bit deeper on certain aspects of the film and the score. And so I definitely recommend you check out their episode and give that a listen, as well as mine. So I'm no expert on this movie, so I just want to give a little disclaimer to just let you know that a lot of what I'm saying are my opinions, and some of them are facts that are just things that I found on the internet. So are they really facts, or are they other people's opinions? We don't know. Anyway, the movie The Batman just came out, I think, on March 4th, and it is a much darker version of the Batman films that we know and love. A lot of people were really huge fans of the earlier films that came out. Gosh, I don't even remember when Batman Begins came out, but with Christian Bale as Batman, and people were really big fans of those movies, and I decided to watch some of those movies and compare it to this new one and kind of draw a couple of parallels. This movie is so much darker and more intense, I think, than the previous Batman movies were in a couple of ways. One of the ways that I noticed was how dark the film was. Literally, the dark colors, the dark lighting was very different and evoked a very different emotion in general to the entire film. Another thing that was very different was the film's soundtrack. The Christian Bale movies, I believe Hans Zimmer did the soundtrack, and you know, he is like the king of movie soundtracks or whatever. I don't always love his music, but the soundtrack to those movies, pretty good, but this soundtrack is very, very exciting, very particularly interesting, and I wanted to discuss it a little bit. The soundtrack to The Batman that just came out is composed by Michael Giacchino, and God, I probably butchered that. I am so sorry. Maybe it's Michael Giacchino. I don't know, but he did a lot of other recent movies like Spider-Man No Way Home, and he did a fantastic job with this film score. So I just wanted to credit him as we get into things, but I'm going to go into a few things that you may not know about this movie. Before I go into the overall musical score elements, which I will, I do want to talk about the movie a little bit. So it's darker, it's grittier, and it shows a version of Gotham that is completely just dreadful, riddled with crime and fear and all that good stuff. And that's kind of how the movie opens up. So this version of Batman and Bruce Wayne is the darkest version yet that I have seen, and I wanted to share with you this little known fact, or maybe it is more well known than I think, but it's not something that I knew when I watched the film. And that is that Robert Pattinson's version of Bruce Wayne and the Batman is actually inspired by Kurt Cobain, the lead singer and guitarist from the band Nirvana. And of course, my cat has just hopped onto the desk, so who knows how well this rest of this recording is going to go. So his character was actually inspired by Kurt Cobain, and this is something that the director, producer, and writer Matt Reeves has discussed, and I think Robert Pattinson has discussed it as well. But from the research that I've done, the entire character of Bruce Wayne slash Batman was inspired by Kurt Cobain, and as some may know, Kurt Cobain was known to be a drug addict, and it's kind of interesting. What Matt Reeves has said is he said that Bruce Wayne himself, he's kind of a drug addict, and his drug is his addiction to this drive for revenge. If you don't know about Batman, you know what? Honestly, I don't know what to tell you. Don't really know why you're listening if you know nothing about Batman, but for those who may not, Batman's parents were murdered when he was a kid, and in this movie, really he doesn't know exactly what happened to his parents, but his butler Alfred has kind of told him kind of a false version of events that he later finds out in the movie. And if you haven't seen the movie, I'm probably going to be spoiling it for you a little bit, so I would not recommend listening to this episode unless you have seen the new Batman movie. Matt Reeves has said that Bruce Wayne slash Batman is kind of a drug addict, and his drug is this addiction to this drive for revenge. So he's kind of this Batman Kurt Cobain hybrid. And something that I noticed right off the bat is that Robert Pattinson's hair is long and disheveled and messy, and maybe they were going for a Kurt Cobain look there. I don't really know for sure. So the movie takes place with Batman only being in his second year of ever actually being the Batman. So I should say this is Bruce Wayne's second year of actually being the Batman. He is so much more dark and absolutely more reclusive than the Bruce Waynes that we may have seen in the past. For example, Christian Bale's version of Bruce Wayne was pretty outgoing. He was kind of out in the public all the time. People really knew him as Bruce Wayne. And one thing that that set of movies really does well is they develop Bruce Wayne's character. However, I would argue that they develop Bruce Wayne's character in those movies more than they develop Batman's character. Whereas in this movie with Robert Pattinson, they do a really great job developing Batman's character and less good of a job developing Bruce Wayne's character. And I might go into that throughout this episode. We'll see if I get there. But in one of the opening scenes of the movie, he is Robert Pattinson's version of Bruce Wayne. You know, he's sitting in this dark room and he has the eye makeup all over his eyes. He hasn't washed his face. He hasn't showered. He just looks super disheveled and really depressed. And, you know, Alfred is trying to talk to him about his company. And he's trying to say, like, hey, man, you got to get out and be a part of things. You know, I have people that are asking for you and you're not coming out. I need you. I mean, I'm really, really riffing on the script here, but it's like, I really need you to come out and do stuff. And he was like, I don't care about that. I don't care about that. And something about this version of Bruce Wayne's character is that he doesn't really care about being the Bruce Wayne that we know so well. He doesn't care about being this billionaire who runs this company. He doesn't care about any of that. He's kind of focused on this revenge and vengeance aspect of who he is and his entire character. And in another scene at the beginning of the movie, you see that he says, when someone asks, who the hell are you supposed to be? He says, I'm vengeance. I'm gonna talk further on that later in the episode. To continue this little fun Kurt Cobain parallel, I want to talk about a song that was featured in the film two different times. I would argue that this song is featured in the film as Batman's main theme throughout the entire movie. And that song is Something in the Way by Nirvana. And just to go into what this song is about, it's actually said to be about when Kurt Cobain got kicked out of his house and he lived under a nearby bridge. And another fun little fact is that Kurt Cobain actually spray painted some of the lyrics of this song on the wall of that bridge at a certain point after the song was out. And it has since been painted over, which is kind of too bad. But you know, they were trying to clean up the city. But anyway, if you haven't heard this song, I'm going to play you a little clip. And I'm really just going to show you the very first little introduction part of the song without the lyrics, because that is the part of the song that actually ends up being Batman's theme throughout the entire movie. So here's that clip.
Sprung a leak.
So that's the guitar intro, and that's pretty much the exact riff of the Batman throughout the entire film. So now that you've heard this, I'm gonna play you a clip from the movie that plays whenever Batman shows up. It plays all the time, but it's mainly meant to be Batman's theme, and here is that clip. Sound familiar? This is something that I noticed right out the gate when I was watching this movie. For one, when that Nirvana song came on, I was like, yes, this is so good, because the song itself is so dark and dreary and just awesome. And it's been one of my favorite Nirvana songs for as long as I can remember, which is just, this movie was made for me, I guess. But then I noticed that the soundtrack was playing that little motif for that little guitar riff in the actual music itself, which I thought was just so awesome. So it just shows how the music lends to the plot. There are so many crazy scenes in this movie. I can't even describe every single one of them to you. If I'm remembering correctly, at the beginning of the film, basically there are these punk asses on a subway. They're riding the subway and they have face paint on them. It's not like Joker face paint, but they have white face paint and kind of like black over their eyes and kind of over their lips and stuff like that. The opening scene in the movie actually takes place on October 31st, so it would kind of make sense. These guys are watching a video of some of the members of their little gang punching this dude in the face, and they're all laughing hysterically about it and shouting about it on the subway, and they notice that this man kind of in front of them is noticeably uncomfortable, and he gets up and he moves over a little bit. That's when one of the bad gang boys kind of looks over at one of his friends, who clearly this guy, he seems pretty nervous. He doesn't seem to fit in with his group at all. He just feels really uncomfortable, or seems really uncomfortable. He gestures at this guy and he points at the one that walked away from them. They kind of have this look together that kind of says, hey, that's the one. He's the next guy. And just following the scene, they end up attacking this man. They corner him, they hold him up, and then they tell the same young, uncomfortable looking member of the group, now knock this guy out. Punch this guy in the face. And he looks so terrified. He does not look like he wants to do it. And it's clearly one of those situations where he's being pressured to do this really shitty thing. That is when the little motif, the little phrase for Batman starts creeping up into the music's soundtrack. Oh, it's so good. Okay. And you know, Batman, he looks huge. He looks so scary. He looks really intimidating and really intense. And he shows up and pretty much beats the crap out of everybody there. And one important thing that people will notice after they watch this movie is that the person that he was actually saving and protecting was terrified of him. And he said, please don't hurt me. Please don't hurt me. Because he was actually terrified of Batman. And you know, as everybody knows, Batman is a masked vigilante that's running the streets of Gotham, and you're not supposed to like the guy. You're supposed to be scared of him. That's of course what the politicians say, the media says about him. But I think a lot of people generally do, you know, prefer to defer to liking him than not liking him. But that's what happens at the beginning of the movie. Now again, because Something in the Way is featured so specifically and so importantly, it's really interesting how it plays into the rest of the film as the film progresses. So again, if you haven't seen this movie, you're probably gonna wanna watch it before you listen to the rest of this episode. I'm just gonna give another little spoiler warning right here. When the song is first featured, it's featured kind of shortly after the introduction of the movie. It's really setting a scene for how Gotham looks and feels and is, and it's really speaking to Bruce Wayne's character as well. He's super reclusive, he's super dark, he doesn't want to really have anything to do with his billionaire status or lifestyle. He really mostly just cares about being this vengeful Batman. He really just cares about, you know, doing that. And that's kind of what this movie is about, is it shows his battle between dealing with and confronting the issues that he's facing his entire life. One of those issues being, I don't know how my parents died and I don't know why. And later discovering the truth. What's really exciting about this movie is the villain in the movie, the Riddler. The actor who played the Riddler, Paul Dano, had an incredible performance playing this character. In my opinion, he was definitely kind of this like goofy but really creepy version of what we know the Riddler to be. His outfit, again, like compared to other movies that the Riddler was featured in, like the Batman movie where Jim Carrey was the Riddler and he was wearing a ridiculous colorful bodysuit with question marks on it, this Riddler, he was terrifying looking. But I want to talk about how the music for the Riddler plays a role in this movie and how the overall score of this movie kind of depicts the Riddler and the Batman as a whole. The Riddler's theme is actually just the song Ave Maria. If you haven't heard Ave Maria before, I'm going to give you a little clip of that, but the clip that I'm going to play is actually from the movie, not from the original recording. Ave Maria is by Franz Schubert, and if you want to listen to the original or as close to the original as you can get, you can go ahead and look it up on your own, but I'm going to play a quick little clip from the movie. So the first way that this song is played is the very first second of the movie. The huge words, "The Batman," fly over the screen and Ave Maria immediately starts playing. Now the opening of the scene, we don't actually know whose point of view we're viewing from at the time, but it turns out that this is the Riddler and he's watching his first victim of the movie, the first person that he is going to kill in the movie, which is actually someone who's running for mayor of Gotham. And in this scene, again, it's Halloween and his son is actually in his little Halloween costume. He's like a ninja or something. And he's waving around his ninja sword and his dad walks in and he pretends to kill him and his dad falls to the ground and pretends to play along with it. And then he gives his son a big hug. And then you see his son goes off. I think he's holding a little bag or something for trick or treating and he walks off and his mom goes with him, which means that the mayor is mayor-elect, whatever, someone who's running for mayor. He is alone in his home. And that is where it shifts forward to his murder. The Riddler murders him by bludgeoning him in the head with a very interesting tool. I forget what it's called, but basically you can scrape up carpet with this thing. That's what he uses to murder him. He smacks him in the head several times. He gets on top of him, his dying body lying on the ground, and he wraps duct tape all around his face. It's really, really dark and gruesome. And the music that is playing during this scene is actually Ave Maria, but there's a special added twist, and this is part of why I wanted to talk about it in this episode. It's not just Ave Maria as we know it. For the music theory nerds out there, I know there's a good amount of you, or just the music nerds out there, the song Ave Maria is in a major key, and the melody is in a major key. So there are no notes that sound dissonant or out of place. They all kind of make sense together. So we've already heard at this point the way that Ave Maria sounds at the beginning of the movie. Let's hear how Ave Maria sounds in the movie where the Riddler commits his first murder against this person who's running for mayor, whose name I forget. Here it is. Now to the untrained ear, this clip doesn't really sound like the same song at all, but let me tell ya, it is the same song. And I really loved how the composer of this movie decided to do it this way. It's so cool. So first four notes of Ave Maria by Schubert has four notes in a major key. And the fourth note of the phrase goes up to the major third of the chord, whatever. Now, this version goes up to the minor third, not the major third, which adds this eerie, creepy, strange effect to the entire phrase. There's six notes total in the phrase. The first three notes remain the same. However, the fourth note goes to the minor third instead of the major third. And then the fifth and sixth notes, well, They're similar, but that fifth note also goes to the minor instead of the major when it goes down. Now again, throughout the entire movie, this is the Riddler's theme. Now I remember, I've seen this movie twice now. I actually saw it 2 weeks ago with my boyfriend, and then I saw it last week with my best friend in LA. I've seen it in theaters twice. I plan to watch it again when it's back on HBO Max, probably next month. Now, I was thinking to myself, why is Ave Maria even in this movie? Like, what is the meaning behind this? Now, the song itself actually is used in, it's known to be used in funerals. It's known to be kind of this melancholy, sweet, sad song, even though it isn't a major key. And I don't really know the full history as to why that is, but what I can tell you is that the song in the movie is actually used in a very eerie way, even when it's played in its original way. Like I said, the first scene of the movie, we hear Ave Maria, and we see the Riddler watching his first victim, doing something happy and wonderful with his family. The next time we hear it, if I'm remembering correctly, is actually at that person's funeral. So not funeral, but they do an entire memorial service for him. And Bruce Wayne, as Bruce Wayne, shows up there, as well as hundreds of people in the city, okay? And there's a boys' choir there singing Ave Maria while everyone is walking in before the ceremony is about to begin. Now we do hear it a third time. When we hear the song played again, I think we actually like technically hear it four times, but I'll get there. So when we hear the song again, it's the scene where the Riddler has actually lured Batman and the Commissioner to the orphanage, which is where he, the Riddler, grew up. Now, we don't know all of the information behind this yet as the movie goer. We don't understand that the Riddler actually grew up in that orphanage, but we find that out later. When we're in the orphanage, he has these really scary messages spray painted all over the wall, and there's a projector that is actually showing Bruce Wayne's father when he was the mayor. Or was he running for mayor? Ugh, my facts are not great here, but check it out. That's where we hear the song being played again. And we see a photo. We see a photo of the young Riddler as a child, and he's wearing these big glasses, and he's a member of the boys' choir. And it turns out that the Riddler was in a children's choir at his orphanage and sang this song, Ave Maria, as a child. This song is so significant to him because when Bruce Wayne's father was running for mayor, he promised that he would create this fund called the Renewal Fund. And all of this money in the Renewal Fund would be invested into and then sprayed out to areas of the city which were in need of growth or change or, you know, obviously funding. And one of the places that this money was going to go to was going to be the orphanage that he grew up in. Okay, so the Renewal Fund was supposed to be this new real change. I think in the movie they call it a real kind of change or a different kind of change. What's interesting about this is the day that Bruce Wayne's father announced this to the public, this song was sung by his boys' choir that day. That's why this song is so significant to him and so part of the Riddler's big plan. The money was supposed to go to the orphanage. Never did. And that's because about a week later, Bruce Wayne's father was murdered. And that, you know, that money didn't go where it was supposed to go. So the Riddler's entire plan in the movie was to expose the people who ruined his life and created all of his misfortunes. That's why this song is so significant. Now we hear this song another time when, of course, he sings Ave Maria very creepily, and well, it was very cringy when he was actually in Arkham Asylum and Batman was visiting him. He started singing it out loud, kind of screeching it out loud, and he was kind of laughing in between notes or whatever. It was very dramatic and very over the top and strange. And he did all of this in the movie to kind of describe. He basically did this as a way to show Batman his own version of vengeance, okay? So, ha ha ha. I just really, really like how the score and the music contributed to the overall plot. And that's what we're here to talk about today. As strange and all over the place as this has been. But I really, if you have not seen this movie, go watch it because I've already spoiled a ton of stuff for you. But if you have seen this movie, I would encourage you to go on Spotify or YouTube or wherever the hell you listen to music, and I would listen to the soundtrack. There's so much to say about the soundtrack. Other than the specific things that I've mentioned here today, you will truly be blown away by how powerful the soundtrack is now that you know how these phrases and motifs are being used in the plot and in the storyline. And I just, Again, I just think it's so cool how Robert Pattinson's overall portrayal of Bruce Wayne was inspired by none other than Kurt Cobain. So this is the part of the episode where I transition completely. And as I told you earlier, I'm a huge fan of Kurt Cobain and of the band Nirvana. They're like my top three or four like favorite bands of all time. And really, I can't even describe to you the significance of them or of the music that they make into my life because it's so much. I just really, really love Nirvana and I love Kurt Cobain, but I also don't. The guy had a lot going on and I don't want to idolize him or kind of put him on a pedestal or anything like that. What I do have right here in my hand is the Kurt Cobain journals. And this was actually published and released quite a while ago. I found it at a bookstore and I decided to pick it up for myself. And it is the most fascinating, dark writings ever. It's all from the literal notebooks that he wrote the journal in. So you see his handwriting, you see how sporadic and crazy everything is all throughout the entire book. This book was published in 2002/2003, but the writings are as early as 1985 and actually go all the way to 1994, which was the year that Kurt Cobain committed suicide. I decided to sift through all these journals. I really wanted to dig into how Robert Pattinson's portrayal of Bruce Wayne and the Batman was inspired by Kurt Cobain. So I decided to sift through some of these journals just to see if I could kind of dig in and find anything significant. Unfortunately, I don't have written lyrics of when he wrote the song Something in the Way. We already know what that's about and we've addressed that a little bit, but I found some other really interesting little pieces and I wanted to share them with you. So I'm going to be reading a few passages from Kurt Cobain's actual journals. As the listener, just think about what you're hearing and see if you kind of make the same connections that I do. I'm not sure when this journal entry was written. I can only take a guess, but I'm going to assume that this was in the early 90s when this was written. So here we go. Just before I fall asleep, and when I'm really bored, I lay down and think for a while until I fall into a semi-hypnotic state of subconsciousness. Some call it daydreaming, some call it just fucking spacing out, but I feel like I'm not here and it doesn't matter because I'm sick of putting myself in boring situations and conversations. Just everyday, basic sitcom happenings. Some call it thinking, but when I'm in this particular state of mind, I forget to think and it becomes strictly observatory. I notice things very sensitively, like if I focus really hard, I can see small, transparent blotches of debris on the outer shell of my eyes and can only follow it as my eye moves downward. It's like watching film footage of amoeba or jelly-like plankton under a microscope. And when I close my eyes and I look up to the sun, the bright orange redness radiates an intense picture of blood cells, or what I think are blood cells, and they're moving very rapidly. And again, I can only focus for so long before my eyes strain and I have to look away from the sun into a pillow and rub my eyes hard. And then I see, some call them stars, tiny spears of sparkling light which only stay for a second, and then as my eyes focus again amongst the water or tears from rubbing, I open them up into the sky and forget about stupid fucking little squiggly things moving on outer layer of my eyes or the close-up blood cells in my eyelids, and I stare at the sky with peripheral vision and not trying but just happening to make out all kinds of faces, objects, statues in the clouds. And I can do the same with the wood grain of the paneling on my walls. The reason why I thought that that passage was rather significant to the movie and to Robert Pattinson's portrayal of Bruce Wayne is probably because of how much eye makeup he wore in the movie and how you normally, at least from what I remember, you don't typically actually see Bruce Wayne with all the black eye makeup under his eyes when he takes his mask off. You always see him all clean shaven and clean face. You don't see the makeup under his eyes. In fact, in the Christian Bale movies, I don't think you ever see him actually applying the eye makeup onto his face. And in this movie, you see Bruce Wayne multiple times with just that eye makeup smeared all over his eyes. And when I read this passage, I really thought about that and I kind of pictured Robert Pattinson when he's sitting there in his little den looking over the footage from his little contact lenses that kind of film everything around him, and that's what I kind of thought about that one. Here's another passage that I found from Kurt Cobain's journals. Again, I'm not exactly sure what year this came out, but it was sometime between 89 and 94. So without further ado. I purposefully keep myself naive and away from earthly information because it's the only way to avoid a jaded attitude. Everything I do is internally subconscious because you can't rationalize spirituality. We don't deserve this privilege. I can't speak, I can only feel. If you want to know what the afterlife feels like, then put on a parachute, go up in a plane, shoot a good amount of heroin into your veins, and immediately follow that with a hint of nitrous oxide, then jump or set yourself on fire. The reason why I kind of enjoyed that passage is because he's kind of talking about his own reclusiveness and his own inability to kind of absorb the real life information around him. And I think that Robert Pattinson's portrayal of Bruce Wayne kind of really shows this, the dark reclusiveness, obviously, but also this desire for him to stay as far away from the real world as possible. All he wants to do is focus on his goal in mind, this vengeance goal, this desire to make big change happen. But it's so hard to really read what he's thinking. And I feel like this passage really spoke for itself. This one's a really, really fascinating and interesting one. And again, I was completely blown away when I found this passage in Kurt Cobain's journal. I really think that after I read this, it'll also kind of speak for itself. So check this one out. There's a small percentage of the population who were born with the ability to detect injustice. They have tendencies to question injustice and to look for answers by their oppressor's standards in ways that would be considered abnormal. They have tendencies and talents in the sense that they know from an early age that they have this gift to challenge what is expected of their future. These kids are usually hyperactive, uncontrollable brats who never know when to quit because they're so wrapped up in whatever they're trying to prove that they eventually offend someone, not meaning to, of course. But this is good. They usually go through childhood thinking they're special. It's pretty instinctual, and maybe they've been told by their parents or teachers that they're special. Maybe they're put into gifted children's or achiever class in grade school. For whatever reason, they end up molding into a person aware of their abilities and not understanding them and having bloated egos caused by society's insistence that those with an overly functional insight should be praised and considered to be on a higher level. Easy access towards success. Eventually, they become totally confused and bitter adolescents who tend to see nothing but injustice because by that time, they usually have had the chance to be exposed to others like them who learn from their gifted bohemian ancestors. The larger percent who have and will always dominate the smaller percent simply because of their own privilege. We're not born with even the slightest ability to comprehend injustice. They're the stump-dump garbage men of life. It's not their fault because they physically lack that special extra group of cells within the brain that welcome a questioning consciousness. This is definitely not hereditary. It is definitely not their fault. They aren't simply misguided. Of course, the extremes and levels of the ability to detect injustice range to all levels. This is not to be taken seriously. This is not to be read as opinions. It is to be read as poetry. It's obvious that I'm on the educated level about 10th grade in high school. It's obvious that these words were not thought out or even reread. Her/his attempt at showing that no matter what level of intelligence one is on, we all question love and lack of love and fear of love. It's good to question authority and fight it, just to make things a bit less boring, but I've always reverted back to the conclusion that man is not redeemable, and words that don't necessarily have their expected meanings can be used descriptively in a sentence as art. True English is so fucking boring, and this little pit stop we call life that we so seriously worry about is nothing but a small, over-the-weekend jail sentence compared to what will come with death. Life isn't nearly as sacred as the appreciation of passion. So obviously, for many reasons, I thought that passage was insanely interesting because I think that Bruce Wayne may very well have grown up to be one of those kids that Kurt Cobain is describing in his journal, that Bruce Wayne may very well have been this person who's able to recognize all the injustices in the world, but doesn't really know what to do with this ability and doesn't really know how to socialize or understand the overall depth of what he's feeling. And I really thought that that passage really spoke to what Robert Pattinson was trying to achieve with his character in Bruce Wayne. Now, I haven't read these passages to you, but in a lot of Kurt Cobain's journals, he doesn't talk explicitly about self-harm or him self-harming, but he really talks about how much he struggles between liking himself and thinking that what he's doing means something and really hating himself and kind of wishing that he could just go away. And he definitely talks about that a lot. And I think that with this new Bruce Wayne that Robert Pattinson is portraying, he is in his second year of being Batman and he is purposefully going out every single night and just destroying himself. And what is it in the name of? It's in the name of vengeance at the beginning of the movie. And it's so strange, you know, that the Batman that we've seen before in the past, like in the Nolan trilogy, he is so much more well-liked and well-loved by people. He's really out in the open. He has such a good presence around people and everyone just seems to kind of gravitate toward him. But this is the exact opposite of that. And I think that this whole idea of kind of portraying this like rugged version, this actual character inspired by Kurt Cobain, it's really interesting how they're choosing to interpret it in this film. And Robert Pattinson, you know, says in the movie that Bruce Wayne has been hiding away and he's not really a socialite at all and he cares nothing about that and he's just building these little contraptions and things just with Alfred, and even Alfred thinks that he's gone completely insane. And it's just the difference that you see in the bat suit too. It really looks like it's been through it already. Like, it looks kind of more like rugged and beat up and everything. And Robert Pattinson has been quoted to have said that he's been going out every single night for 2 years, getting beaten up and shot and stabbed and burnt. And it really shows. Right at the beginning of the movie, he gets like grazed by a bullet. And that has just never been done before in these other movies, at least as far as I know. So I think that that's just really what they're going for. And I like it. And I like digging deeper into all of this and kind of why they chose to do it this way. And this is why I made this episode. I just think that the music going along with the entire atmosphere of the film and his portrayal of Bruce Wayne, I just think it's so great. A lot of people have criticized his portrayal as just being too boring, just simply because he shows a lot less emotion other than, you know, anger and rage and vengeance. You know, you don't see him as vulnerable a lot. And I think that a lot of people criticize Robert Pattinson for that. But I really believe that he was going for a specific thing and a specific type of character. And if you aren't as familiar with Kurt Cobain, then you can go back and kind of listen to some of his just interviews and videos of him talking, and I think you'll see the parallels a little bit more. I just think it's so interesting how they went about this, and so exciting. That's really all I have for today's episode. I hope that this episode kind of inspires you to listen to some soundtracks of your favorite movies or your favorite TV shows and kind of think about how the music is really lending a role into what's happening in the plot and the storyline. This definitely is not the best movie soundtrack in the world. It's, as much as I love this movie, it's not the best movie in the world either, but I just really, really loved how these two themes in Batman were used and how it was tied to Nirvana and how it's tied to Kurt Cobain. I just had to make an episode on it. And I hope that if you like this episode, I really want to make more in this vein. I have a couple other planned that kind of talks about movie or film soundtracks, but I also have some planned just about some other musicians and artists that I might just like to showcase. So if you're interested in that, definitely keep an eye out for it on this podcast. I just want to thank you all again for checking me out and listening to this and just bearing with me. This format is new for me and it's really exciting. And so if you liked it, let me know by sharing it, supporting it, telling people to check it out. Otherwise, sorry that you don't like good movies. Just kidding. But yeah, seriously, Batman is a really awesome movie and I can't wait to watch it for a third time and fangirl even more about it. I just really thought it was fun and different. And I just want to say that I love that the crime scenes were showcased more in this movie and that Batman was working directly with the police on the scene looking at evidence. I thought it was hilarious when I don't think that this was a police chief or anything, but one of the police officers was like, "Really? You're going to let him tamper with evidence?" And then the commissioner was like, "He's wearing gloves." I just thought that was so funny because he was able to work directly with the police. He was able to help them every step of the way as far as the crime scene is concerned. And I mean, it was almost like he was too smart and he knew too much, because I think it made the police in the movie look kind of dumb that Batman like literally could just figure everything out so easily. But maybe that's just because he's a badass little detective and we love him. I really love Robert Pattinson too, so this is definitely my biased take on the whole thing, but showing the crime scenes is so cool because I think in previous Batman movies we were able to see a lot. I mean, Batman is always kind of apocalyptic for Gotham. Like, it's always the end of the world for them. We don't really see what happens to the people after they die. I mean, I think in The Dark Knight we saw a couple of brief crime scene moments, but not nearly to the extent that we saw in this movie, and I just really appreciate that. And I just wanted to throw that in there because that's something I'm a huge fan of. But anyway, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you would like to check out more, I have a ton and they are a completely different format, but I plan on putting new solo episodes out during this year and over the summer as soon as I have the energy and patience to be able to. But thank you so much and I will see you during the next one.